Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Ad News Pubcast, the podcast that celebrates the industry's penchant for a sociable drop and a chat.
Hi, I'm the editor of Ad News, Pippa Chambers, and this is the Ad News Podcast recorded at Forbes Street Studio. This is our final podcast of the year where we look back at the biggest stories of 2018. This year was a significant year of change for the industry, with consolidation being the emerging trend across all sectors, from outdoor to publishers to agencies. In Out of Home, we saw U-Media and AdShell come together and the mega merger between JCDecaux and APN. Both huge deals, but the biggest, of course, was between Nine and Fairfax. So for this podcast, I'm joined by digital editor Lindsay Bennett and our journalist Josh McDonald.
Hey.
So, Josh, on the subject of consolidation, we've seen a lot of the media owners, consolidation. What will this mean for next year?
It definitely ramps up competitions on both fronts. I mean, U and JCDecaux are now going to be fighting tooth and nail to win those key briefs, and there's still a few out there for tender. But what it does do is it gives U a sector of two standout leaders who I'm sure the industry will now look at to drive further change. I think that's really important, including, digital measurement, verification and transparency. And I think that's going to be really important going forward. But when it comes to Nine and Fairfax, I mean, you now have like a juggernaut in 2019 whose assets outweigh its competitors in some rights. I think all eyes will be on the newsrooms. Nine's already stated that the journos won't be impacted, but there's still skepticism around that, and I think that's fair. From there, it'll be like how they compete. I mean, Seven and News Corp already had a couple of tie-ups this year with the auto trading platform announced at their upfronts. So I'm definitely interested to see how that continues. But all that being said, I really still don't see Seven and News Corp having a bit of an acquisition trend in 2019.
Which is interesting, because I think there definitely will be more consolidation next year. And knowing News Corp, they will definitely be looking at how they now compete with Fairfax. They're fierce rivals, those two. So I can imagine News Corp is now looking how they strengthen their own business to compete with the force of Nine. Now it's absorbed Fairfax. Consolidation also has a kind of a huge impact on the agency world as well. The media agency CEOs that I speak to are saying there's less channels to choose from, which actually could increase the price as well. Nine can choose more. So it has wider ramifications on the industry.
Definitely. And speaking of other major moves, obviously we had CBS swooping in to save 10 after it entered into voluntary redundancy. And obviously we had, that was massive. That was a really exciting move for the industry. I think a lot of people were kind of excited about what this means. Josh, what does having CBS in this market mean for players like Stan and other TV networks? And how do you think they're going to compete in the market?
Well, look, I mean, it definitely keeps me up at night thinking about what they've got planned for little old Australia. I mean, this week All Access goes live and they appoint a CBS exec to lead 10's digital sales team. So if CBS wasn't sending a message to the market that they're here this week, I don't know if they ever will. But when it comes to Stan, I think, Showtime, Stan is a big part of this. I think we can't ignore because Showtime rumors are just going to continue to swirl. I mean, obviously CBS owns Showtime and it's, tied up here with Stan. And, Stan CEO Mike Sneesby is still confident that long-term deal is safe.
But there's a long-term, contracts really, from what I hear, you wouldn't be signing a four-year deal. How much is this just, he's sort of giving us that statement so people rest assured. But really, if you're Showtime, surely you're going to be pulling back on those contracts and putting them into, your own platform in the market.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see even if they just terminated it early and cut the losses. But, I mean, that's a big move as well, because I think Stan has had that portfolio for quite some time. So it's a big move to make. But by the same token as well, I mean, we saw how interested CBS was being tied up with News when they pulled the MCN deal. So I don't think they're going to be that keen on being tied up with Nine either. But for, you know, I guess from a network battleground perspective, not much changes. I'm not sure the TV market really changes that much because of this. I mean, Ten are still out there saying they want those younger demos. Nine want the main channel win, and Seven's happy with the total people. So I think what it's more about is this BVOD and SVOD offer, you know. CBS All Access is huge in the States, and now it's here. It's Ten All Access. I think that just puts a whole new set of competition, particularly when every other BVOD and SVOD platform is doing something different. You know, Nine's drumming up numbers so quickly. Seven's playing that non-mandatory game. And SBS continues to chug along, picking up crazy subscriber numbers as well. So I think it's just going to be a very interesting battleground for these guys when it comes to SVOD and BVOD and catch up.
I just don't know how they're going to get people to pay for when everyone's got Netflix or whatever. You know, people have signed up. I just think that's where they're going to struggle, getting people over the line.
I think that's probably when they start to pull back on Showtime and start getting more exclusivity.
What's interesting to me is now you've got Ten and CBS with obviously more of a global offering, and Nine with the strength of Fairfax's print assets, they can go out and market and talk about being kind of a full service shop. Seven doesn't really have a unique selling point now. We know that media agency leaders have really been impressed by the global scale of CBS, and they went on the roadshow to the US and experienced what CBS can really offer on a bigger scale. And as I said before, Nine has TV, print, digital, radio. So how does Seven stand out next year? I think for me, that would be a really interesting question to answer.
Yeah,
I guess, what do you think of the sports, the streaming, the digital offering? Do you think, you know, and what were they this year? The 12th consistent in total share. Do you think they're going to keep this up, Josh?
Well, it depends. I mean, again, like anything, it has wider ramifications, and I just wonder if buyers are going to continue to believe that total people is what they need to buy, and that's where it comes down to. That's where I think it'll get interesting is when do buyers sort of say, no, we're more interested in, you know, the grocery shopper or the 16 to 35 over the total people when we buy.
Well, if you look at the digital side, the targeting is so niche on the popular platforms like Facebook, YouTube. On TV, you're just buying a lump sum. When media buyers are really getting used to buying the person, Josh, he likes sports and what else do you like?
I don't know.
Sushi. You know, they're getting used to that type of buying. So why would they, when they turn to TV, buy a mass audience? It's a question that will definitely come up.
I guess, you know, another big move, obviously, on the owner side was the MCN split from Ten, which, you know, we know from our readers and our traffic, you know, this was a really, really hot topic. We had, you know, CEO Anthony Fitzgerald, he left. That was huge. He's been a longstanding, key player in the industry, very successful business, which has kind of been almost unblemishable. There hasn't really been any, I guess, kind of negative stories about MCN. It's always been a bit of a powerhouse. Then they, you know, then came his exit, then came redundancies, then the split from Ten, the loss of money, you know, the loss of, revenue from that deal. What do we think is going to happen to MCN in 2019? Do we care as much? You know, obviously they've still got that huge title, which is Foxtel, you know, so they are busy. They've got some great assets. But any predictions for MCN in 2019?
Well, I think they're in a tricky spot. I mean, you know, there's been a lot that we've said about them this year, but I think they're doing the right thing now by saying, well, look, here's a rebrand. We're going to refocus ourselves and rebuild. And I think that's really interesting because their strength has always been in the tech, the data, and the innovation. So I think placing some focus firmly back in that in 2019 will really, you know, help them to accelerate back into market. But obviously, look, they have a big piece of, you know, revenue coming from Foxtel, and they really need to focus on that. That's a huge part of the business now. And they've sort of doubled down and said, we're really going to commit to, you know, making Foxtel, you know, work, I suppose. Because Foxtel's not, you know, in the easiest of positions either. So I think the next 12 months, there's a lot of unknowns for MCN, but they also have a lot to focus on. So
yeah, and I think it's important to remember that they were successful in doing well before 10. Then the 10 deal came, you know, that was great. But it feels that the way the market perhaps talks is that that 10, that was it. You know, that was the big thing. That was, you know, that's the undoing of them, whereas actually they were doing great things before. So on that subject of Foxtel, you know, many argued they were late to the market with some of their, you know, streaming offerings and breaking up the different categories and, you know, Foxtel Now and then the different sections and things that you could get within that. What do we think? Is their streaming business going to save them with, you know, some of the recent changes with KO? Do you want to? What are your thoughts on that, KO?
They were late to the game, and I see why they had to be, because they knew it would cannibalize their main subscription business and that source of revenue. But KO in the first few weeks has received a lot of praise. I mean, notably in News Corp papers, of course.
And KO, just for those who aren't as au fait, how would you kind of summarize that?
Sports streaming service.
Yeah, a dedicated sports streaming service.
Position very independent to Foxtel. Perfect.
Very independent. I think that's what stood out to me when we were writing about it. They're talking about it very separately. There's no mention of Foxtel. If you didn't know Foxtel owned it like we did, you actually wouldn't know that was the relationship. And driving around Sydney, I'm seeing a lot of marketing investment, outdoor, some targeting on YouTube, things like that. So they're investing heavily. They're operating it as a very separate company. It remains to be seen, but, you know, we always go back to the parent test, and my dad, loyal Foxtel subscriber, is like, yeah, I would definitely subscribe to KO, and he was looking to cancel the Foxtel subscription. So
I actually had the same conversation with my husband as well. I was like, what about this? As we're trying to cut back and not stream, and he was like, yeah, definitely sounds good. So that's good.
Well, look, I mean, I think KO is something different. I'm not sure how it'll cannibalize. I mean, it may not be extensive, because as they have positioned it differently, I'm sure that they're probably looking more not to target their own people. They're looking for that younger streaming, or what they keep calling the streaming generation, which is obviously the 16 to 35s. But, you know, they've got a lot to work on as well internally. They've only had Patrick Delaney in the role for about 12 months. And then they obviously had Andy Lark's sudden exit there, which left a few heads being scratched. So, you know, we in a time where they probably need to market themselves in a really, really, you know, nuanced way, or at least, you know, with something different and quirky, I think this is going to be what they really have their eyes on in 2019. Not so much KO, because it's already been placed in its own, I guess, silo. So I think it's a bit safe.
Yeah, certainly a lot going on the media side. So obviously on the agency front as well, there's been, you know, some big mergers in the last few weeks, stacks of leadership changes. You know, Lynn, tell us about some of these mergers. What do you think's been most notable this year?
Yeah, I've definitely been busy this year keeping up with the industry. Thanks, guys. Most notably, WPP, which has begun the consolidation of its portfolio. First with VML and YNR to create VML-YNR. I have to speak slowly to get that one. And most recently with JWT and Wunderman. YNR and JWT are really globally recognised brands, but in this market, and globally, they've kind of failed to really achieve what the Monkees have done here. No one really talks about them as
that
being
big,
the
kind of sexy
cutting
agency.
Yeah, the cutting edge of creativity. So they've been merged with lesser known but more digitally focused brands of Wunderman and VML. It's no surprise. Everyone's been talking about this for a while. Even when Martin Sorrell was in leadership, there was talks of mergers, but this is definitely the new strategy put in place by Mark Reed, the new CEO. If you look at WPP, change kind of needed to be made. It struggled for the last 5 years or so with its share price tanking, especially this year.
And 90-odd agencies as well.
Yeah, it's huge. And I struggle to even write about them. You know, how I'm confused by it. How would clients not be? So the conversations I have, it really stems back to the uncoupling of digital from the traditional creative shops like JWT and YNR that left these agencies kind of unable to compete in the new world order. And I think really it's the industry correcting itself. WPP has realised you need to have digital in-house. You can't be sending off a digital brief. Everything's digital now. And I think I've heard in market people say, oh, it's a cost-cutting measure and that's all they're after. Look, it is. They want to save money, but it's so much bigger than that. And some money will be saved, but it's actually a larger strategy of future-proofing these agencies that have no life if they can't be digitally led. TV, radio, some of those mediums, the money there is drying up, so they need to have other kind of channels that they can tap into. So that will continue to go on next year. You know, we've heard rumours of Ogilvy merging with various other agencies. We'll see on that front, especially locally with the exit of Mike Conaghan. That was a major, major move this year. He's been in the role a long time. There's a lot of global moves that are still to be seen, but we also have the extra complication in the local market of WPP merging with STW a few years ago. So whoever comes into that role, you know, we speak internally of who we think it will be. It's a huge task to follow what Mark Reed is setting in place, but also start merging more of those STW agencies. So, you know, when I look at that big map that we have up on our wall of all the agencies, I'm not so confused.
I think it is a hard task, but I feel like that's two different jobs, coming in, consolidating, yet at the same time it needs a CEO who's going to help with culture and help kind of manage the people. So I almost think, do you think we will potentially see someone coming in short term to fix it, do the kind of consolidation, and then bring in someone else?
It's a good question, and it depends what you believe will happen WPP. So if you believe what I'm hearing, it'll be chopped up and sold for parts. And in that case, yeah, you'd bring in a James Warburton that led a merger like that, who comes in, preps it for sale, preps it for whatever it needs to be. But what I think will be, I don't believe will be chopped up. I think they need someone that will be there long term. And I'm not, you know, who... Long term for me is 5 years. I don't think anyone really stays in the job for more than 10 years anymore. But I would hope that whoever's coming in has a long term vision and is not going to be around for a year just to sell it off for parts.
Because things like this will definitely impact culture. And I think that's what we hear when it comes to naming of those agencies and the rows between who goes first, YNR or VML, and how important it is, and how those things really resonate and are important to people. Something we'll continue to follow. As well as consultancies were a huge topic for us this year. We had the rise of the consultancies, with them kind of infiltrating, many would argue, the agencies, taking slices that they're used to working on. At the same time, we've had agencies saying that they have been consulting for ages. This is something they've been doing. Why was it such a big topic this year?
It was definitely a bigger topic in the first half of this year. I actually feel like it's almost cooled off, which is interesting. I think WPP has kind of outshined any agency advertising kind of conversation. It is the new norm. I feel like people have come to terms with their presence. People are seeing them in pictures, and it just is what it is.
The reality.
Yeah, it's the reality. So I'm hearing less concern from agencies about their presence. Also, recently, Sunita Gloucester actually left PwC and joined WPP, and she was such a big hire when they started their CMO advisory, you know, competing against the agencies, competing in the marketing sector. So her move maybe signals something bigger coming in the industry. I read an opinion piece from Mark Ritson this week that said, when obviously Russell Howcroft left the industry to join PwC, it was called doing a Howcroft, which I love. And he suggested that next year we'll see more execs doing a Gloucester and coming back to ad agencies after trialing out consultancies and realizing, you know what, it's not the right culture, it's not the right environment. I would love to report on that next year. So yeah, we'll kind of see who comes back. Maybe Russell will come back. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. He's hanging on in there. And also, it's such a different kettle of fish. And I think they're bringing in these execs for their experience, you know, on brand side and with clients. But from what we hear, there is some big, big targets that they have to reach, and there is a lot of pressure.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
On the subject of Sunita, obviously there was a lot of big exits this year. As we've already mentioned, Mike Conahan. We had Simon Ryan, who was, you know, long-serving exec at Dentsu. He was Kara CEO for years, then moving up to the top job, who's joining car sales. That was a really big big exit. We had Paul Brooks leave Kara. We had Henry Tager arrive back in the market, take a job at Amazon. Lots of big moves. So, Josh, I mean, what do you kind of attribute all this change to?
Well, I think when you look at Dentsu, it is a lot of change. I mean, you've had three new agency leaders across Visium, Dentsu X and Kara. You're currently without a top boss, as you said, who also left the agency when he was sort of saying something like, well, you know, we're changing the agency model, we're going in a new direction, we're leaning heavily on our diversified services. And then obviously there's been some significant account losses, which, you know, are unfortunate, but do happen. I would say going into 2019, I'm not sure. I don't really know the outcome. I definitely think that they're just going to have to make a lot of firm and tricky and difficult situations, but really stick to them. I think this year there's too much movement not to go hard on securing a good leader, making sure that they don't say, okay, no, now we're changing the agency model a completely different direction. I think you just stick with what's happening and, you know, make it happen. But also, all eyes are going to be on Dentsu X as well. I think a lot of people forgot that they were championed by that federal government account, which they lost this year. That was huge, $150 million out of a small agency to start with as well. Dentsu X is not the biggest agency they have by far. So that's my sort of interesting one to come out of Dentsu, I think.
This year was described to me as a transition year, both with people but also global account moves. And I think I agree with that. When you look at the big moves, there's almost like a settling that needs to happen, which I think will happen, and that will happen next year. This year was the unsettling of a lot of leadership. I think that's just along with the wider change that's going on in the industry. On the Dentsu front, what's interesting is when I speak to people, they've reminded me that something like 22 businesses that Dentsu have acquired in the last few years are approaching their earnout next year. So that's a hugely complicated task to onboard those businesses. So whoever takes that role has a huge challenge. And you know what? Maybe Simon Ryan got out just in time.
Yeah.
Well, that's the same with the Conahan. I feel like we've got a lot of these big roles that are now free, and I'm not sure they're that appealing. You know, and especially even if you look at Dentsu, they've had a lot of account losses, as you said, and I kind of think it kind of reminds me when I look back, I mean, not as dramatic as this, but to Mediacom when they were looking for a CEO for a very long time. They got Sean Seymour, and he came in, did a good job, you know, and then kind of left after a few years. I just think it's potentially going to be tricky to fill some of those roles. And maybe, you know, people like Simon Ryan joining car sales, Henry Tager joining Amazon, maybe that's not a bad move. You know, maybe, I guess, a lot of these execs have maybe done their time in agencies and it's time to sort of try something new.
It's a hard gig. Who would want it? I would not be putting my hand up for either of those roles. It's a challenge industry. I think the WPP role has so many global tie-ups, and then also the added complexity of the local STW merger. They're very complicated tasks. So from people I speak to, definitely on the Dentsu front, everyone says it'll be someone from overseas.
Yeah. That's the bit.
Yeah. WPP, there's a few names that are floating around. But really, they're huge jobs, and whoever wants to get involved in that has to be hungry, has to want it, has to be up for the next few years for a real fight, not only in the organisation, but in the press. WPP gets a bloody beating. Maybe sometimes from us, but mainly globally.
But also, like, this, they need to start making these decisions, like, soon as well. You know, I know obviously we're going into the end of the year and into the beginning of the new, but these are two holding groups that have, as you said, copped some flack this year. So you really need a leader to come in soon and step in hard and fast and be ready to take this on.
Because how does that trickle down and impact clients? You know, without a senior leader for a long time, you've got to, you know, there must be ramifications. This must
both
trickle
of them
down.
Still in their roles, though.
Yeah, so yeah,
yeah,
that's
they
true.
Have that some is leeway. True, actually,
so I think, they both end the end of this year. But so they'll,
well, a couple of weeks, I
surely
think.
There'll be an announcement in Jan-Feb. I think Dentsu will be early.
Yeah, Dentsu will
be early. DPP like to take their time on things.
Yeah,
but
got to get it right. We're all watching. And I guess the pitch cycle did not slow down. Perhaps not as many big accounts were up for grabs, but a trend was obviously the global pitches, like Amex moving its global account, global media account to UM, Mindshare taking out global media for Mondelez. On the creative side, WPP lost its biggest client, Ford, and Publicis picked up Mercedes-Benz. Feels like increasingly there's just so many global pitches that are just ripped out of the hands of our local agencies. Do you feel there's been more global pitches? Because it seems like it.
100%. It's definitely a conversation I'm having in market. They're becoming more frequent, which is concerning for the Australian market just because of our size, and we're an expensive market because of our size. And a margin that works in North America or London is not going to work here. So what we're actually doing by sometimes agreeing to these global pitches is introducing an unsustainable model into this market. And I've spoken to a lot of execs about this. HQ says, we're taking this account, you'll be on this margin. Australia goes, our margin needs to be 5% higher. They go, too bad. It's a holding group P&L that you're working into. Yeah. And at the holding group level, it makes sense. But here, it doesn't. And the conversations I'm having is, you might kind of win a few free kicks when you have more of a network model. But Australia doesn't have a lot of sway in the negotiations, and it doesn't actually bring a lot of joy to local agencies unless you're winning something for free.
Well, I mean, the pit's right as well when you get them taken away from you. And I suppose that's always going to be the case. It is a cycle, so it comes around and goes. But I think, what's the solution? Like, does Australia have to become a market in its own right then? Like, obviously you said we're small and expensive. How do we separate ourselves from a global pitch? How do we...
It just feels like it's out of our control. It's their control.
But, I mean, I think all you can do is, which is what I think a lot of the execs say, which is just take the punches and really work hard on winning those lucrative local clients who you can sort of control the margins with, and you can have those, like, I guess, deeper conversations with to explain how our market works.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure anything's going to change in the short term, but I really hope that there can be some sort of solution in the long term.
There's pockets of interesting agencies fighting back, or not fighting back, but maybe not participating in the global pitch race to the bottom. WPP has definitely raced the bottom. Not raced the bottom, but they've gone after those global pitches. Maybe so has Publicis. But if you look at Omnicom, let's say DDB, all of their clients largely are local clients. Same with OMD. A lot of them are local clients. So it's actually investing in those local clients rather than chasing global clients, which are great for the network, but as I said, not great for Australia.
Yeah.
So we haven't really touched on the independents here as well. What was the pitch the other day? And it was, they didn't want any big networks involved. You know, is this something where indies going to win out? Are they, you know, where are they? Where are they?
Yes, that was bigger. So Bega decided they don't want to work with a holding group after their relationship with Cara. Mm. And they appointed Thinkabell, but it was an independence-only pitch, which to me was so interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty cute.
Because that really shows how much some clients are frustrated by the various politics within a holding group. It's hugely beneficial to indies. I think we'll see that continue to move forward. Also, there's a huge trend towards the reintegration of media and creative. And if you look at who can do that, it's the likes of Thinkabell. Whereas in comparison, agencies like TBWA, DDB, they're part of a wider network that need the media businesses to thrive. Same with Group M. You know, they don't want to cannibalize their media offerings within the network, so they're not going to start doing full service as much as they would like to, which puts indies in a really good place.
And maybe we need more of these brands like Bega, these local brands, to be calling these independent pitches. You know, if they want us to help support them as a local brand, maybe it's time that they now give back to our industry and kind of maybe focus on the independents. So obviously we had a lot of big accounts up this year. Just at a glimpse, who would you say were the biggest ones?
On the creative side, Ad News revealed this week that M&C Saatchi had taken out the Tourism Australia creative account, which is actually not a huge spend for how much hype it gets, but it is such a high-profile and prestigious account because of the global kind of significance it has if you look at the Dundee work that was in the Super Bowl. And publicists Digitas took the account on the digital side. Other kind of creative appointments was Virgin Australia, which moved from Clemenger to DDB. Amazon, which elected TBWA and Ogilvy, which they never announced, but we know because Amazon cannot talk to the media. Another huge account, but not actually a very interesting pitch, was David Jones, which actually moved away from their creative agency in favour of design agency Maud. And there's also a few other big ones to be announced. Defence Force is a few weeks away, same with TAC. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a year of huge accounts, but there were some interesting ones. And if you look at David Jones moving to a design agency rather than appointing a creative agency, previously they worked with TBWA. It's quite an interesting shift to see if that trend continues, moving away from the big shops to something smaller because they took a lot of things in-house.
And is that also because David Jones don't do that big TVC anymore? I think they've traditionally said they've pulled back from the TV ads apart from the big clearance or the sales. You know, maybe that fits it's more in line.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's where creative agencies are reinventing the wheel at the moment. TV budgets are not as much. Historically, that's what they relied on. But TBWA, for example, to hold the David Jones account, they needed to have a design agency. So I'm sure after that, they probably, you know what we need to do? Build this type of different offering for their next fashion client. So while the accounts weren't huge, they definitely showed where the industry is heading.
And media pitches. Media pitch. Everyone loves there's a few big budgets out there. Josh.
Everyone likes to read the dollar signs.
That's, yeah.
The biggest fish of them all, I've already mentioned it, was the federal government account. But $150 million in billings, and what a win for UM. And on that point too, what a year for UM. Let's just go through them. FedGov, Nestle, $50 million. AGL, another 23. Amex in a global. A cheeky Heineken account for $3.5 million and consolidating their Lion portfolio. All this year under Fiona Johnston, who's only been there for over a year. Like, it's pretty big for UM. And I think the old adage goes, you know, heads down, bums up for 2019, right? Like, I mean, don't let anything slip. Mm. But then you've got some of the other big guns with Suncorp slinging its $70 million account over to OMD, which is huge. Publicis nabs GSK in a global win alongside Luxottica this week, which does Ray-Ban. And then M2M, they drove away with Hyundai, I got to use that pun, for $51 million. I'm pretty happy with that one. And then Mindshare scores itself that $40 million Mondelez account. And then obviously there were other stuff. There were more government account wins. You know, Initiative got themselves a seat at the table for WA, which was $60 million. And Starcom scored the Football Federation of Australia account as well. But then, you know, don't forget about people like Havas as well, who had a slew of retail client wins. And they also took on the challenge of working for Foxtel's KO streaming service, which we discussed. And then obviously those key retentions like Disney sticking with Dentsu and Officeworks with Initiative. But how fun has the carousel been this year? Like, holy hell, look at all that money.
It's definitely kept us busy.
And there's still a lot of pitches still out there. Hopefully we'll get to hear more about them before Christmas. So, and obviously there was also the subject of the, you know, some of the big one models, the publicist one, and, you know, we can't get it all into this podcast, but looking ahead and also for 2019, we think radio is going to continue on that big trend, you know, media spends up, same with out of home, successful channel, we've got
I mean, they're both making money and they're projected to, you know, take another 2% of media spend, which is so impressive.
Yeah,
I mean,
really impressive.
If, I mean, don't change what's not, you know, not needing fixing. You know, it's pretty simple that Out of Home have obviously, you know, been on a great run this year, but radio's, yeah, done some amazing stuff. Nova on a merger and acquisition run as well, got their events, their esports, and no, I think you'll see more of the same for them in 2019.
Yeah, and then publishing wise, you know, again, another year with a few chops of publications, you know, sad but inevitable. Print, you know, does struggle and has struggled for certain publications. Linz, a bit of a recap of what we lost this year.
Yeah, look, there was a few cuts, as always. Actually, both were Bauer and Pack Mags, the biggest magazine kind of businesses in Australia, were on the quieter side. But that said, Bauer still closed its Cosmo title. It sold off a number of its titles, like Australian Geographic, and it merged the teams of Harper's Bazaar and Elle. But compared to 2017, they actually had a much quieter year, both Bauer and Pack Mags. Of course, Bauer unfortunately had the Rebel Wilson lawsuit, which made global news due to kind of her celebrity status, but also because of the implications it had for other publications on defamation payouts.
Yeah, defamation law would have been blown out of the court. I mean, like,
anyway, you know, it was like 4 million plus what Bauer was ordered to pay. So it definitely had other publishers sweating. In the end, a lot of back and forth, a lot of court dates. I was sick of writing about it, but she was awarded $600K, which is a pretty fair payout,
that's
I think.
In line.
Yeah,
that's
so that's pretty standard. The 4.1 million or whatever it was,
yeah,
was
crazy.
Completely blown out and definitely had a lot of people scared.
Yeah, awesome. Well, no, not awesome for Bauer.
Not awesome for Bauer.
And I guess, you know, let's move on to some predictions. So I'm going to say, you know, we haven't had time to go into Facebook, digital platforms, inquiries, lots of that to come next year. I think we're going to see TV and Facebook. I don't think that's going to, there's no sign of those two kind of letting up. I think the opinion pieces war between each other, I think that's going to carry on for 2019. Same with the streaming, as we've covered. I'd like to see ad tech come back with a few more exciting news stories. I think it's really kind of died down. I think a lot of people have got their heads down this year. Perhaps just not been as many exciting stories there. So predictions from you guys, Linz?
Yeah, look, I'd say more mergers for WPP. That's an easy prediction at this point. I'd say more network agencies like TBWA and DDB moving into media buying, and more acquisitions from consultancies. I'm keeping it simple. That's my predictions.
Well, I'm going to touch on the one that we obviously haven't mentioned, which is sport. Two of the biggest sporting...
There's a reason we haven't mentioned that, Josh, because Pippa and I...
and we also haven't...
Well, I'm going to touch myself about it.
We're not sporty.
I mean, but cricket and tennis swap networks, that's huge. And I'll only touch on it like quickly, but I'll seriously be watching out for Nine to see if they can ace with the Aussie Open and see if Seven and Foxtel can, you know, obviously hit that coverage for six. I'll say this much. I mean, don't expect to see me anywhere but the couch. Like, there might be a bit of working from home during the test games, I think, just to see, for research purposes,
of course,
how that coverage works. But I suppose from a prediction point of view, I think they'll both actually have a really challenging year. I don't think this is going to be easy. I don't think this is a walk in the park for either network. There's a lot of kinks to work out, and I think there's a lot of Australians out there who take sport way too seriously, but they're always the loudest ones. So you got to watch out for, I suppose, what they say. But the other is obvious. I expect Nine, Ooh, and JC2Co to just bed down their businesses rather than, you know, go out to the market with statements of grandeur to say, we're here, we're ready. I think it's about getting the platforms together, the tech stacks, the culture creation, all that exciting stuff that they'll just have to really work on in the quiet, I think. So, yeah, that's my predictions.
Awesome. Okay. So that's it from the Ad News editorial team. Thanks for listening to the podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
We'll see you next year.
Bye.